G'day, folks. Talk to Shannon Bates. He runs Pusher Limit workshops. All around inclusivity, around disability, the social barriers, the social bias, breaking it down, and the education around that. He's someone with disability of spina bifida. And where he's doing these workshops in the community and within school settings. And the guy just radiates positivity. And that really helped me. Because he was a mentor when I was first initially going through my spinal cord injury in hospital and the rehab settings, showing myself how to function as a quadriplegic, someone with disability in society. And his viewpoints really helped my wheels moving forward. Or as he says, pushing the limit, moving forward. So I thank you for that, Shannon. And I know that the way that you helped me would help many others out in the community, that's for sure. And if you like the podcast, hit that subscribe button. Be much appreciated. And we've also got a Patreon page. So if you want to help further the podcast, the channel, the link is within the description. Click into that. Check it out. And if you contribute, that'd be great. I want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here. And they got great assistive tech also. So righto, let's get into it.
Keep rolling with Jake Briggs.
Oh, yeah.
Boom, we're recording. Shannon Bates, brother, thanks for coming on the podcast and having a yarn.
Awesome, mate. Good to be here, Briggsy.
Yeah, no worries, brother. You know, I've been wanting to have a yarn to you for a while and, you know, a bit, the important work that you're doing, just tapping in and just seeing how you're going in general, you know, like, and in this crazy world of COVID and what we can do, what we can't do, and, you know, and when we're looking at people's mental health in general, and that's a, you know, that's a tricky one, getting the balance, hey? So just tell us how you've been going in general, brother.
Yeah, mate, not too bad, eh? It's obviously COVID has really, stuffed a lot of things up for people and, you know, especially with their mental health and stuff and, you know, work and relationships and all kinds of, you know, friendships and everything sort of, you know, it's people can't see each other. It's just taken a massive toll on a lot of people. But, mate, I'm doing okay. Obviously, have your ups and downs, as we all do. We're all human, right? So, yeah, mate, but I can't actually work at the moment because I have a business called Push the Limit, as you know. So it's going around to schools and talking to kids about disability awareness and bullying and resilience, accountability, depression, and goal setting. So unfortunately, Gladys has said no more until further notice. So whenever that is, I don't know. But, I guess it's just giving me the time just to work on restructuring my own business and stuff. I actually had a talk, my first Zoom disability awareness presentation last week, which I had no idea how I was going to go, but give it a crack. And, it was
all
right.
It's all about. Jump in the deep end, mate. Have a go, you know.
Yeah, have a go. And so they've asked me to come back and in 2 weeks' time, I was speaking to 7 kids last week in a small class and the principal was pretty impressed. So she goes, can they speak to 100 of us? So I've gone from 7 kids to 100 in 2 weeks' time. So that'd be a bit interesting. So, yeah.
Mate,
you just got to, you know, rebold things and, you know, just to get by these days. And
that's it. It's all about adaption, yeah, mate. And I just want to say, you know, congratulations. And, you know, stepping up, geez, 7 to 100, and who knows what the next step is.
Yeah, mate, that's it, you know.
Yeah.
I remember when I worked for the Department of Social Services and I spoke to the whole country for International Day of People with Disability within the DSS. Okay. And mate, that was I thought I was Barack Obama. You know, speaking of the whole nation.
That's it.
So yeah.
That's awesome, mate. And I just want to like kick it off by first saying that, you know, we talked about this off camera, but just when I was going through my spinal cord, you know, I got a spinal cord injury being a C5, C6 incomplete quadriplegic, but initially going through that stage when I first had my accident and going through, you know, when it's ICU, then the spinal ward, and then Royal Ride Rehab, the Spinal Cord Rehabilitation Centre. And just when I first met you, mate, in Royal North Shore, you know, when I was in the spinal ward and just, you know, my head's racing 1,000 miles an hour and just thinking, you know, how am I going to adapt? Like, how am I, you know, when it's got to do with physically, mentally, and, you know, where I've got people surrounded by me and where it's, you know, Amy, she was my then girlfriend and, you know, wife now, but, and then family. Yeah. But, mate, having yourself come in, like, that helped me a lot when I was going through, when I first saw you in the spinal cord rehab and just seeing someone else in and share that, you know, we've lived experience. But, man, just the energy that, like, I couldn't really do much at that stage, but just the energy that you would give, man, and how that, you know, helped me pump myself up, but at the same time, like, showing calmness and just putting it out there, man, that meant a lot to me back then. And I know, like, a lot of people that were going through that struggle of first, when they first initially had their accident. And I know that, you were highly talked about, mate, and just what you could bring and how it made us feel with people with spinal cord injuries, mate. So I just want to say thanks, hey.
Mate, you were my pleasure, and I'm glad I could be, you know, part of your journey. You know, look, it's and to see where you were to where you are today, mate. You've just come, you know, a mile, like miles and miles. You know, like what you've come from, the, you know, from the rehab ward to now, mate. And one of the funny things that, like, you know, like, just funny things sticking in your mind. And I'll never forget, and you can actually correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember you put a photo on Facey, and it was about, you bought one of those stretch cabs.
Right,
Yeah. And I think Amy was your girlfriend at the time, and she was your chauffeur. She had a chauffeur's hat on in the front seat, you were in the back in the limo.
Yeah.
Like, I just got to think, I'm like, this guy's going to be all right, eh? Like, he's got it sorted, you know? Like,
yeah, so where are we off to now, James? Nah, shouldn't say.
You know, but just those sort of things, you know, I'm like, you know, they stick in my mind, and I'm like, man, this guy's going to be all right. Like, he's got it sorted, you know? So, just adapting and, you know, just getting by. And, man, what you're doing at the moment with your work and your podcast and, you know, work helping the Indigenous community, disabilities advocacy, mate, you're definitely making a massive, massive impact into that role, mate. So congrats to you for what you do, mate, because, you know, it's about making change, which will last longevity, you know. So
appreciate that, brother. That means a lot too, you know. It's just chipping away, and, you know, I've having a go and just what you were talking about, like adaption, and just, you know, as years went on, you know, when I was first, you know, got back into the construction industry and then just finding my wheels amongst that and just how I would adapt to a different occupation within that industry, and then, you know, leading into disability advocacy and then running a disability service provision company and doing all sorts of stuff. But
one thing I remember is that, like, you know, I remember saying to you ages ago, like, you know, being a chippy yourself, I'm like, man, seriously, like, get into project management, or, you know, I think you're working for Multiplex.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. And I'm like, man, all those guys out there just, you know, have like, you know, sore backs and, you know, like, sore legs from digging all day. And I'm like, mate, jump in the office. It's just easier. And double the dollars.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah.
But
that's, yeah. That's,
you know, like, it, it's.
And they,
you've,
man.
You've definitely. You, and you, and you,
yeah, you're right. Sorry.
Sorry.
No, nah, you're right. You go.
No, I was just saying, like, you're still contributing to what's being built or the plan of what's happening, you know? So whether you're, you know, behind a computer or discussions or, you know, you're still contributing to what's, you know, the end product, right? So
that's it, man. And that's, you know, just keep chipping away no matter what kind of, like you said, it doesn't matter if it's on the computer or, you know, or whatever medium it may be, and if meeting, like, you know, if it's with people in, you know, in person podcast, but, you know, and I'm surrounded by an awesome team when I've got, you know, awesome wife, Amy, and family and friends, and, you know, and just knowing good, solid people like yourself, man, and that always pumps me up to get up every day and have a go. Awesome. That's the main thing. So,
yes,
and, you know, and one thing that's always intrigued me, brother, like, and because you're one of a, like a few that I know that have these particular type of wheelchairs, because I was looking at a photo of you this morning. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. And because I was always intrigued when we're going through rehab because – and since, you know, I've been in the chair for 10 years, like, you know, most people have, you know, with their manual wheelchairs is like you got your two big wheels on the side and your two small casters, but you've got, like, just three wheels, like a mono, like – why is that, brother? Like, I've never asked you, hey?
Man, well, I've always wanted to, you know, I guess due to my independence, you know, just trying something different, and I've always wanted to be different. So one of the guys that I got my chair from, three-wheeler, and I fell in love with it, you know. And it's just like, and I don't actually have any disability aids at home, you know. I'll just use the you know, bathrooms. It's big enough, and it is one level house, but I don't actually have any specific, you know, requirements at home. But having the smaller chair, when I was living in my own unit, I had an ensuite, which was
as big as my chair. That wasn't accessible either, was it? You've never really had accessible
bathrooms, eh? No. So, you know, yeah, so you've just got to, like, for me, with my independence and, I guess, being able to move a lot more, that having the three-wheeler chair makes things a lot easier to do. So getting into those small, confined spaces, having four wheels, you know, I'm not able to get as close as I wanted to for the toilet, or, you know, so as in my ensuite in my room was as big as my chair. So I turned to my right, like, you know, 5 inches, and then I could get close to the toilet and turn left to another 5 inches to get to the shower to transfer. So, but having the three wheels got me closer, you know, so.
That's awesome. I always thought about that. Yeah, that's why I wanted to ask you. And it's good for other people to know too, you know?
Yeah, man. And but also it's cheaper. Like, for some people that you know, that rely on the NDIS for funding and stuff, it's cheaper to find a chair to suit your lifestyle and your housing ability than change your housing and your lifestyle to suit your chair. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And the thing is too, because you might not know how long you might be in that house or something might happen, and then
correct.
You can take the chair with you, but you can't take the mods with you.
Yeah.
You know, so that's always going to be the tricky aspect.
You know, it's about maximising your the chair you have, you know, so make sure it suits you and your independence, you know, so... I've got grab sticks and, you know, that I use for high cupboards and whatnot, but, you know, or I'll use a broom, whatever works, you know,
that's awesome.
Yeah, man.
Mate, and before we jump in to push the limit and talk about the importance of that, Just want to talk to, like, you know, who Shannon Bates is, who, what his disability is, and just what it was like, you know, growing up, like, because, and just tell us, brother, like, you know, if you feel comfortable to, just about the, the good, the bad, the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, so.
Yeah, too easy. Mate, well, I was born with splenomyxoma. I'm 44. So my parents had no idea that they were going to have a child with a disability. I was a, I call myself a kinder surprise. So, yeah, so when I was born at Paddington, and they rushed me to Prince of Wales Hospital to the have a spinal bifida clinic at the hospital there. And Dr. Robert Jones was my the neurologist at the time, and he said that came out to my dad, and he's also, my dad was in the police force, and he was there with the commissioner, so for support of police, so far as police. And then they said, "Oh, my last name's Frank. Oh, by the way, happy Father's Day, Dad."
happy Father's Day.
So, and he said that the doctor said that you know, Frank, your son's extremely ill. He was born with a disability called spina bifida. And back then, like, it was sort of, it was, you had two choices, either, and this was what the doctor said to my dad, we could put your son in the corner and he'll pass on with natural causes, or we could fight, but we can't guarantee that that the outcome will be better.
Jesus, but, that's so daunting, man, for your parents, hey? Like, just those options.
So mum's in hospital at Paddington, my dad's over at Prince of Wales, and like that sort of separation there was a bit hard for them. And my dad made a phone call to mum, and obviously had the support of the police commissioner there with him. And and then so he goes, well, look, let's operate, and you know, got nothing to lose. You know, if this is what the statistics, like, this is what I've been given. So, 95 operations later, I'm still here.
95?
But, you know, growing up, I was paralyzed from the neck down.
Right.
Because
I've seen pictures of you as a youngster, like, you, like, braces around your legs, playing, like, soccer and stuff.
So, and then it was just through the physio that gave me more and more movement. I was on push-ups by the time I was three. So, you know, like, those physios worked on me day and night, you know, so around the clock. And, yeah, it gave me more and more movement. Started playing soccer when I was six with my calipers and crutches. And then going from there, I played one season, or three quarters of a season actually, and then I went to re-register for the next year under eights, and they said, "Oh, sorry, we can't register you because parents have rallied against you and your family and said that you're a danger to the children on the field because of your walking sticks." So I was six, man. Like, what damage am I going to do? So they said that I was a danger to the kids. So I was barred for life by the St. George Soccer Federation, and then I was barred by the St. George Federation, and then they escalated this. So yeah, so all these guys that get red cards or yellow cards.
I can't believe that, man.
Yeah, if you get like all those guys now, they get yellow cards, red cards. I'm like, oh, I'm barred for life at six, mate. Come on, shut it out, you know.
So I get come on with on. It, whatever.
Yeah.
So you'll be back next week playing. Like, stop having a whinge.
That's it, eh? I know, yeah. Right? I know. So, but you know, and then I was actually on 7, 9, 10 years current affair ABC. Because I was
all happening.
Yeah. So and then I remember Kerry Ann Kennelly on the Good Morning Show. She asked me, she said to me, she goes, so what are you gonna do, Shannon, with your like now you can't play soccer? And I said, I'll get into wheelchair racing. So got into wheelchair racing when I was 10.
And how'd that go? Like, so sport's always been a good outlet, yeah, like when you're growing up and
yeah, mate.
Yeah, so tell us about that, like some of the wheelchair sports that you got into.
Well, I tried, like, obviously as a junior, you try all the sports like tennis, discus, javelin, shot put, archery, wheelchair racing, basketball, swimming. I sink. I'm not a swimmer, eh? I went to my...
You're a solid fella, man. You know?
Man, I went to my
first... You've got a big frame on you, brother.
Yeah, I went to my first... I went to my first athletic carnival and for kids with disabilities, and I tried swimming, and it was only 50 metres. Didn't make it, man. And then I had to get the Victorians to help me to save me because my own teammates went up and helped me out. So, man, I'm not a swimmer. So yeah. I got into the track. And mate, loved it. So, yeah, I've been racing ever since, and up until, you know, 2000 Paralympic Games, and qualified for the pentathlon, which is five events, discus, javelin, shot put, 200 metres and 1,500 metres. And then I made the team, and then just prior to the opening ceremony, they cancelled my event because of the lack of competitors that qualify worldwide.
Oh, no.
So each country that hosts an Olympic Games or Paralympic Games, they actually set the qualifying criteria. So, yeah, we caused our qualifying criteria at the time was quite high and high standards. It sort of shut a lot of other countries out from competing in the sport of pentathlon. So yeah, for my class anyway, you know. So
and how'd that feel, you know, getting that knocked away? Like you'd have been training hardcore, like leading up to it, and then you're like, what do I do now?
Representing Australia before that, from like, you know, 92 to up to Paralympics, in world titles and whatnot, and come 2000, I was like, I could have like set myself a goal of like, you know, being in a career, you know, like, but I felt like, even though it was only 5 years after school finished in 95, but I could have set a platform for that. And I was like, I just sort of stepped away from the sport for a bit, and you know. Because I'm like, I felt like I got burnt, like, and I shouldn't have let it get to me, but all that hard work, it did rock me in, like, massively, you know. So I'm like, oh. And I'm one of those people, I don't get burnt twice, you know. So you burn me once, that's it.
So get out of there. Nah, that's hard, man. Like, you're working sweating, you
know,
it out.
I still trained and, you know, still kept to myself and, you know, turn up to events here and there, but just sort of, you know, got into work and, you know, just doing things to try out, you know, and that's how I ended up in rehab, working as an educator and, you know, like going through the platform of doing other things and, yeah.
And before we get into that, right, so going back, because I want to know what it was like for you back at school, because if my memory serves me right, did you use some sort of track chair to access, like when you're in school, to go up and down stairs, or?
So I went to primary school, I was able to walk on my crutches and calipers.
Yeah.
And then I had an operation just at the beginning of year seven, so when I was like 12, and the operation backfired. It was just to improve my walking as I got older, and it didn't work, so which put me in the chair, you know, full-time pretty much, because it was just damaging my legs and my knees. And so, yeah, so I started using the chair since I was, 12. But, yeah, and then I went to high school. And
what was it like just with kids in general, and how, like, you're talking back then, like, so how was it from the teachers and the kids and just being involved with general society, mate, you know?
Yeah.
Because kids can be cruel, mate, eh?
Yeah, mate, they can. Sorry, we should be good. Yep, you there?
Here, mate. Yeah.
I primary school, like, I went to school for kids with disabilities up to year three, you know, and then my parents fought tooth and nail to get me out of that environment because they could see some potential in my ability, you know. So, and I wasn't brought up as a child with a disability, you know. So they're like, they just wanted to give me the best quality of life as possible, you know. So they put me in a mainstream primary school for year four, five, and six, mate. And I'll tell you what, it was hard as in. Like, the teachers were awesome. I got to year four and I was like a foreign object.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was just like, you know, kids, was that
kids and teachers included or what?
No, teachers were fine, man. They were great, you know. But, like, just the kids, they didn't want to know me. And then towards, like, you know, kids can be cruel and, you know, like, but, I got to the end of year four and there was a lot of name calling, like, to start with, and then got to year five, and then that sort of escalated into actual physical violence towards myself, you know. So I'd be gang bashed, and, you know,
really?
Up to four kids at a time at once, and
that's full on.
And then having my wheelchair thrown on the highway on oncoming cars, just. Absolutely laying the boot in, you know, like, just because I was different. They graffitied my parents' car, like, just it was just the worst, man. But I took self-defense lessons at the time to try to help myself, because my parents were like, oh, we'll take me out of the school. But I said, Mom, Dad, like, this is like what we've been through to get me out of the school for kids with a disability. And you've given me this platform to normalize, you know, life and disability. And I said, if we go back, we're shying away from that progress, you know. I said, you know, it's not going to last forever. So, and, you know, some of the older kids, so when I was in year five, kids in year six, some of the kids would, you know, stick up for me and whatnot, and they actually, you know, my parents would, we moved close to school so I could push to school and, like, walk to school like everyone else, like, does, you know. So, but then I ended up having parents of other kids plus my parents take turns in taking me to school, because if I go to school on my own, there's a chance I'd get, you know.
Like harassed or something?
Or bashed on the way to school.
Did you change up
in high school? Mate, high school for me was the best years of my life. If I could do it all over again, man, I would, eh? Seriously. Seriously, I mean that with, like, you know, all my heart, man. Like, year 7 to year 12, man, were the best. And I've still got kids, like, guys that I hang out with today that I went to school with, you know, like, and
that's great.
Came in contact with, and, you know, like, I was the best man at one of my friends' weddings a couple of years ago, and you know, like, that's awesome, you know. And I went to school with her, you know, from year seven. So, yeah, like, that's by so many awesome people, you know, like, But you've got to go through the hard times to, you know, to get the good, right?
That's it. And it's good, you know, you're reflecting on that stuff and, you know, talking about it. And, you know, that adds to, you know, the character, to your character and who you are today and where you're, you know, you're utilizing that with, you know, push a limit. So, but like, because I remember running into you, oh man, this was like a few years ago now. I think it might have been at Central Station or somewhere in the city. You're doing a little bit of work for the NDIA as well, weren't you?
Yeah, I was as a planner for a bit. So when it first rolled out through out the west, so through like Western Sydney, so through from like Bankstown right down to through to Mount Druitt and whatnot. So
and what was that experience? Like someone with a disability that's now working in and around the scheme, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, was that?
Yeah, mate. It was actually to look at where we are today and where we were, mate, we've come leaps and bounds, man. Like, and it's just the NDIA is evolving every day. Like, you know how you usually have a business platform and it sort of plateaus? Well, not the NDIA. It's just growing. It's evolving every day. And as you know, like there's things, there's new policies, procedures, new adventures, you know, coming out these days. And you know, it's an evolving industry. You know, like an evolving model.
Yeah. You reckon? Oh yeah, 100%. And it needs to, because it's only young. You know.
Yeah.
Second biggest reform since Medicare, but it's. You know, it's going to evolve and change and adapt and where people that are, you know, on the high end of scale that, you know, whether it's the CEO and from the top management down, like people that particularly don't have disabilities, but if they're working in around people that have disabilities within, that are working within the NDIA or if it's certain reference groups and whatever it may be, and understand who the people are first and then their disability. And just knowing how to best balance that. And it's just, and it's going to be continuous changes ongoing because it's still growing and, you know, the population's rising up and, you know, there's always going to be more people, whether they're born with disabilities or, you know, have acquired disabilities. So, but, you know, it is good and it's growing and it's getting there. So,
I want to see more people with disabilities in higher roles, within the NDIA, you know, and throughout the whole country, because you know it's sort of like, it's hard to explain, but like you know, people that live it have a greater knowledge, and that needs to be heard.
Yeah, well, it all comes down to the end user, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know, I think So it's like asking me. Well, so it's like me training someone to walk. I've got no idea.
bang, spot on, huh?
So
lived experience is huge. So it's good, obviously, to have the academic chops to back stuff up, but. If you can have the best of both worlds and balance that out, like that's, you know, going to be not just to the person's favour but to the NDIA when they want to employ people that have got disability or lived experience in some way, whether it's, you know, it might be their child or, you know, it might be like that as well. Like they might not necessarily have the disability but they've been involved in it for a lifetime and, understand it that way, and it's just building up that capacity and having people like that, you know, with or without disability, but having the good experience, thing, just
And the good thing is, man, like you know, like as you know, the Paralympics are on now, and mate, that's just so good how we've like the other day we were acknowledged as we were acknowledged for our efforts. By you know, getting $20,000 for
equal pay.
Equal pay. Yeah, for gold medal. How good is that?
That's huge. That sort of
platform, you know, like it speaks volumes, man. Like,
That's it. And because a lot of people do a lot of, you know, whether it's sport for the love of it, and when it's got to do with the Paralympics and traveling and earning medals, but to have money behind it and having that goal as well, because at the end of the day, we're having a crack, and it's good if we're stepping up into that realm, what to do with the Paralympics, and where it's on an even playing field with the Olympics when it's medal status, and you know the dollars are the same. So that's, you know, that's huge when it's got to do with normality and equality at the end of the day, you know.
Dylan Lockhart's, Kurt Fernley's, Louise Savages, like all these, you know, Madison De Desario today, she won the gold medal in the marathon. Like,
I was spewing for the wheelchair rugby team though.
Heartbroken, man. I've been glued to this TV for the last 2 weeks, eh? Like, you know, and you got the Curtis McGraths, man. Like, what a story, man. Like, you know, from war to winning a gold medal in the kayak, you know, and the OC1. Like, that's amazing, you know, like.
Yeah, so many deep, remarkable stories, you know.
But it's these guys that are creating a platform for normalcy.
You're spot on. You
know, like the sponsors are coming on board. And man, the best thing is, man, I remember as a kid watching the Paralympics, and you get half an hour a day on the ABC. Now we've got a full 10 hours a day.
Oh, no.
Or more. You know, like, that's how it should be, you know, and it's so good, but it's now being recognized on mainstream channel TV, like Channel 7. Mm. Like, that's huge. So we've come so far, but it's just like, you think we're at the pinnacle now, like it's just kind of get bigger and bigger and bigger, and you know, these guys are gonna get more and more money, and
well, I'm hoping I'm hoping that, like, not just, you know, every 4 years it's the Paralympics. I'm hoping there's more domestic, like, you know, comps, teams. Yeah. You know what I mean? Whether it's got to do with all the disciplines that you have within the Paralympics, but, you know, so it's brought back home and it's really starting to elevate that way. So then you're going to have pro athletes that, you know, they're getting, you know, they're doing the hard work and having a crack at something that they love, but you know, a few dollars in the back pocket's good too, you know.
Of course, but man, you've also got, you know, like, you know, for COVID, you know, like, you know, a lot of these guys from Australia haven't been overseas to race their chair, or you know, like anyone that's really been traveling is Dylan Dylan Alcott because of his the circuit that he's on, you know.
Yeah, so, tennis. Yeah.
But mates, we have the world's best athletes here that have been representing Australia. So to bring up another generation of athletes, we have it here. So if we can just, you know, if COVID prevents us from traveling overseas, it's going to create a bigger platform here in Australia.
Yeah, well, look at that. So if you're looking at a bigger platform, you got Brisbane coming up. It's a while away, but you're looking at where we are now, where we're getting over the hurdle with a few things when it's got to do with disability. And imagine where it's going to be at when you got Brisbane, because like you're saying, you got this new generation that are pretty young. And, you know, within 10 years, they're like, okay, well, if I've started this sport, you know, by the time I'm 18 or 20 or whatever it may be, I can reach that goal of getting to Brisbane for the Paralympics, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Which is awesome. Exactly.
You know one thing I don't bloody understand? This is off the topic of Paralympics and disability. I've never understood this, right? So yourself, you're from that Oatley Dragons country area, grew up there.
Oh,
but you're a bloody Shark supporter. What's going on, mate? It's a bloody disgrace. It's like Greg Inglis. It's like Greg Inglis, how he lives in New Zealand. I mean, He was born and raised in New South Wales, but plays for Queensland. I don't understand.
Mate, the same thing with Karl Stefanovic. He's a New South Welshman and he's a Broncos supporter. I mean, a Queensland supporter. Like, come on, man.
Don't get it.
But nah. But
answer that one, mate. Don't just push it off to Karl Stefanovic.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, no, mate. Well, see, and I cop this from my family all the time, man. Like, you know, my parents grew up in the St. George area, and obviously when your parents take you to a footy game, they're not going to take you to, you know, they're going to go to the team where they follow. So I grew up following the Dragons, you know. But, mate, I moved to Cronulla and years ago, over 18 years ago. But before that, I was driving and just, mate, being in that culture out there and, mate, just going to the games with mates. I just had this, like this, and my dad worked for the Dragon, for the Sharks back in 92.
Yeah.
As well. So it was that platform where I was like, man, these guys are cool. Like just like my kind of atmosphere, you know, like and I was like, oh, this is a really cool atmosphere to be amongst, you know. So
yeah.
And that's what got me in the beginning, you know. So and then mate,
fair
just
enough.
From there on, I'm just like, wow, this is hectic, you know. So
yeah.
Yeah, but mate, then I moved to Cronulla, and mate, it was amazing. And mate, I've got some, I can't say enough, mate, just the best friends going around. I'm telling you,
Sharks.
I used to work for the Sharks as well. I worked for the Sharks for a bit.
Oh yeah, right.
You know, 2005 to 2009. So.
Yeah, because yeah, I remember you introduced me to a Sharks player when you and I and Denzel went to one of the games. And shout out to Denzel.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think it was a player, Reese something. I think he had to give up footy like at a young age.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Because
something
like
physically happened to
him.
Yeah,
yeah,
and
he ended up being a
PT for the Sharks, I think, or something
like
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he became became a ref for the New South Wales NRL.
Yeah, yeah. Was it Reece?
Yes. Reece, yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah. Reece. What's his last name? Terrible. Yeah, anyway, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
His last name was Hasley, but yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So but yeah, he broke his neck at the time and in the footy, and
spinal
they said he can't play, and so they said it would be you know,
don't want to take that chance because another tackle could end up in a chair.
Yeah.
So
but I got the most flack from my cousin because my cousin Mark Gaznia and he's a St. George player. And I'm like, he goes, what are you doing? I'm like,
you can see the bloody resemblance too. You look like a Gaz, yeah.
But, you know, like.
Yeah, Gaz, doing the little shimmy
like,
shake.
But good. Growing up in that, you know, like with Mark and the family, and, you know, like, so growing up in that St. George atmosphere, and you know, as a young kid and going to games and stuff, but yeah,
that's all good. So we've got that out of the road. Well, you're a bloody Shark supporter, but anyway, well, so push the limit.
Yeah,
like, okay. I really want to, you know, this it's pretty important, like the work that you're doing here, especially when you know, from what I know of it, the work that you're doing within schools, and because like what I said at the start of the podcast, like kids are so impressionable and the impact that you can have on kids and just perception of disability. So if you want to run us through Push a Limit and the important work that you're doing there, brother.
Yeah, mate. Well, I'm just been working on Push the Limit. I started that 5 years ago. So it's just going to schools and talking to kids from daycare to year 12 about topics that relate to their age group. pardon me. So disability awareness, bullying, resilience, accountability, depression, and goal setting. So, you know, whatever, you know, path they're willing to take, instead of just sharing my experiences, but also, you know, back in daycare, you know, like those kids are so cool, like 3 to 5 year old kids, and I've got these little wheelchairs. They jump in, and you know, and it's the best part of my presentation. They're like, "Oh, we're going to race wheelchairs." I'm like, "Oh, later on at the end, you know, like they're so like excited." But it's
so you're taking chairs in so they can physically see what it's like to be in a chair. That's great.
Because you can't. It's so hard to explain to a 3 to 5 year old kid how to do something without actually even doing it because they don't have that attention span. So. So I've got to keep them engaged, you know. I do visually impaired games, and I put them in wheelchairs, and all kinds of different activities. We play goalball, and just so they know what it's like to actually have that disability, you know. So because I think the sooner you teach a child about disability. As they grow older, when they're going through primary school and high school, it's just normal. If that makes
trying to find normalcy about it.
So because I don't want kids to go through what I went through. So you know, because I did it hard, and it was and my sport of racing was my outlet. You know, so during that primary school period, even though I'd only been doing it for a short time, but you know, and teaching those kids at such a young age is so important, like to me, you know. So if I can get them young, it's great. And then when you get kids in the street going, "Oh, Mum, that's Shannon," it's like, "Oh," and their parents can't talk to me, or you know,
that's great.
And then you got, you know, parents in like, you know, from kids in year six. And I'll never forget one story. And I was out with a mate, and you know, this young girl was walking towards me with her parents, and then she's like, "Oh, Mum, that's Shannon," but she didn't want me to know because they were quite a distance away.
Right.
But I sort of recognized her from the area and whatnot. And then so then the father sort of steered my mates away from me, and they're in a conversation, and then I had a conversation with the mother, and she goes, "Shannon," she goes, "my daughter came home from school and spoke about, you know, your presentation about your disability and you know, about being bullied at school and, you know, how to speak up and, you know, and like not cop that, you know, like sort of, you know, your voice is your most powerful asset. You know, so," and she said, "we uncovered so much that we didn't even know as parents what our daughter was going through." And she said, "you've potentially saved my daughter's life." And she said, "really? from a mother."
That's awesome.
Thank you enough. So that was just like, wow. And that's when you realize what you're doing.
And it's important.
It's important, but it's correct. Like, because until you get the validation that you're doing what is like is good, you know. So instead of, you know, talking, you know, what you're thinking.
No, you're like seeing the fruits of your labor. Yeah.
Yeah,
100%. And how do kids perceive you when you roll through? Like some of the funny questions that they might throw at you.
Some of the funny questions, they're just the best. Eh? Like, you roll in, they're like, "Oh, cool, wheelchair. Like, you know, it's got three wheels. It's not normal. It's different." And then they're like, they might say, "Oh, my dad's in a wheelchair," or whatnot. Or, you know, they'll say, "Why can't you move your legs?" And then, but then they show me how to do it. I'm like,
"This is how you walk."
You know, like, yeah, well, thank you. So, yeah.
Kids, man. Right. So,
But not it's such a
So I was just going to say, you got the kids, but how do some of the teachers take it on board too when you roll in and you're telling some of your stories and just how you grew up and what you've done and when you're talking about resilience and everything like that? You'd probably have them taking it really on board too.
Some of them say, oh, you're a bit too graphic in your descriptions. But I'm like,
really?
I'm not telling kids. I'm just telling them my story, right?
Like what you've said here today.
Yeah.
And they're saying that stuff is too graphic.
Some people might find it triggering. Yeah, but it's true, right?
Okay.
But it's only like a couple of teachers. It's not the whole time, you know.
Been
presenting. That's select few, you know. But when I explain that, you know, I'm not talking at a school about something that the kids are not already exposed to. Mm. I said, we didn't have social media when I was at school. I said, they're exposed to way more today than what I was exposed to.
It's true.
So, and then that's how I sort of justify what I say, you know. So, but what I told you is exactly basically what I'm telling the kids at school. Like, oh, well, yeah. I was bashed. And, you know, but some kids might find that triggering, you know, but, and I tell them, if you have a problem, if you find my story distressing, we can talk about it after I've finished. So don't leave that child in distress, you know, so.
That's right. You know, if they can speak up, it might show the youngster that it can, you know, show them the resilience, show them what you've gone through. And then, to be able to speak up, you know, whether they're talking to friends, their parents, their teachers, whoever it may be.
Because it's
hard if you're going through and getting bullied and it's pretty serious. And you would have seen what's going on with schools and like with COVID and mental health. How's that been going?
Mate, I really feel for the kids and also the parents, because they've got this situation now where they can't see their mates. And some of the kids don't have the technology at home to jump on WhatsApp to, you know, have a group discussion with their mates, or, you know, their best friend might live out of the area of where you can go, you know. So, you know, and they might be able to call them on the phone, but, you know, that physical touch and that physical experience is way more powerful than a phone call, you know, or via, you know, FaceTime like we're doing now, or, you know, Zoom.
Yeah, and I'm seeing how some kids are struggling too, because their parents might not have the funds to, you know, if it's going out for Wi-Fi, so they're trying to hotspot off phones and trying to just make things work, and sometimes they don't have enough credit, and then, you know, and then it gets tricky, and then, man, it's a tricky one. It's gonna affect the whole generation, that's for sure, of kids that are trying to learn and adapt. And
but yeah, man,
that's what it's about, adapting. You
know, like, and then you got like, you know, parents that are absolutely under the pump with you know, with work, and then having to come home and homeschool, or all kinds of, you know, so many scenarios. You know, like, you know, I've got friends that are that are nurses and doctors, and, you know, like that toll on them, you know, like through the pandemic, plus having to, you know, do the homeschooling, and it's a pressure on everybody, you know, like,
yeah, tough gig.
It's taking its toll.
So, mate, but it seems like, you know what?
The good news is, man, we're going to get through this. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. I just hope people realize that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and we will get through it, whenever that will be.
Ooh, it's just learning. That's it. It's about adaption and just seeing, you know, learning to live with this, because who knows what how it's going to mutate and turn into something else. Like, because if just like how you got the flu vax every, you know, because the flu keeps moving and growing into different things, and this probably will too. Who knows? I'm not a specialist in no regard of, you know, knowing how that stuff can mutate, but you never know. But the thing is, we're all learning to adapt and take advantage where we can. But
that's it.
And talk about taking advantage. Yeah. So it's good that you've been able to open this up, this, you know, your workshops up via Zoom now. Yeah. Like, and that's the, that's what you're trying to push for. It's pushing this out to other schools via a medium like this. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Just doing things differently. And, you know, sort of, because who knows how long I'm being, I'll be excluded from a school, you know, like, who knows? But I'm not the only presenter. There's so many other presenters out there that come around that schools bring in, you know, all kinds of, all different reasons, you know. So it's put an effect on all of us. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if we can just use the Zoom and the media platform to, you know, send out our messages. You know, it's just going to be the way, you know, life is. But the thing is, man, like what we're doing today, we'll look back and we'll go, look how we used to do things. And we go, and we're actually having to think outside the square. So it's making us, you know, think laterally. You know, we're laterally thinking on how we can actually improve our businesses, our quality of life, our mental health, you know, like, and I think it's actually bringing more people together, to be honest, I believe. So it's just, it's people need to grab onto it, you know, grab onto that. But there is so much help out there and someone's always there to listen. People just need to know that.
Yeah, 100%. Hey, mate, and have you thought about this, brother, like in regards to what you're doing with Push the Limit? Because, you know, it's awesome to do with, like, what you're doing all starts with kids and they're impressionable and, you know, making them realize, you know, trying to look at the normality of disability. But, like, when it comes to, like, adults and subconscious bias and what a lot of adults don't take on board or understand disability, mate, brother, I reckon there's a lot of, if it's unis or if it's got to do with organizations or companies, I reckon would benefit from your story and what you do, but on a level of where it comes up, you know, to adults, you know, because there's a lot of adults, you know, that just push this to the side when it's got to do with disability and not taking it seriously. And like, if you're looking at organizations for employment, and, you know, if they got someone wheeling in or walking in with some sort of disability, they might have this notion already built up in their head and, you know, where it doesn't fit the narrative. So I really, like, straight up, I reckon it would benefit, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. And funny story about, you know, a parent's perception and, like, not knowing what to say or how to educate their child, you know. I remember years ago, I just do things, like, I was living in Cronulla and I just like to do things just that...
Throw it out there, laugh.
Bro. Yeah, make someone laugh, you know, like, and I'll never forget, I was going through the mall, Cronulla Mall, and I dressed up as Santa Claus. And I tied two Alaska Malamutes dogs to me, the front of my chair, and with the reindeer ears. And
you serious?
I'm ringing the bell, and, you know, like, everyone's laughing and whatnot. And this young kid, he goes, why is Santa in a wheelchair? And I just heard it as I went past him. I stopped, and his dad didn't know what to say. And I said, well, mate, Santa was about to deliver presents. And I said, but Rudolph took off from the roof too quick. And I said, I fell off, but I'll be sweet. And he's like, oh, thank you. I didn't know what to say.
You saved dad.
But, you know, like, you know, I think it's just a matter of, you know, the more people out there with a disability having a go and, you know, just creating the conversation, And
creating the conversation. That's what it's all about, brother. So
speaking out and just
finding those platforms and
being
getting
outside
out
your comfort zone.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm all about. It's, you know, taste the fear, get in, have a crack. You know, things might be stressful. They might be, you know, fear of the unknown, but it's just dipping your toes in the water and you know, and try not to tread water, try and rise above and, you know, and get going. So,
yeah.
You know, there's.
But man, you know what?
What's that?
You know what? I'm actually a massive fan. I'm a massive fan of awkward situations. I love them.
Putting people on the spot.
Oh no, I just love it, mate. Like just you know, yeah. So like just people want to comment and I'll just like, really? Like I'll make a comment or you know, like, you know, just run with it. I'm like, I can't run. You know, because like that's
the most important thing. Sorry.
You know,
man.
Run with it.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was a good low, man. Seriously. Like you have to say that. I'm like just awkward situation. I just love them.
It's having a laugh at the end of that day, man. But hey, no, well, thanks,
Heath.
Yeah, you
know, like just making,
yeah. But thanks a lot for coming on board and having a yarn with us. Like, it was important to me, and you know, and going back to where you really helped me, like when it was going through the struggle, and not just myself, but many others, and that really made an impact on me and others. I know that for sure. And you know,
awesome,
and you're doing some important work in the community. And I hope, you know, now you can take advantage of it with this medium. It goes beyond New South Wales, you know what I mean? So,
mate,
but
it'd be awesome.
Yeah. So if people want to get a hold of you, if it's your social media, websites, whatever it may be, throw it out in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Let them know.
Yeah, mate. Just pushthelimit.com.au is my email, is my website. Jump on there if you want to, and then it will. Then my email address is info@pushthelimit.com.au. So, or find me on Insta at pushthelimitau is my Insta. But yeah, just drop us a message. I'll be happy to chat to anyone, you know, like, mate, thank you for your time today. And mate, I'm so impressed with what you're doing in society, mate. You are making a massive difference to so many people. I hope you actually realize that. You and your lovely wife are kicking goals. You know what you're doing? You're actually pushing the limit.
Yeah.
Hey?
Mate,
that's
really
a phrase we
that.
Use all the time, you know?
Just having a go, having a crack, brother, you know?
Having a crack. Good old Aussie crack.
That's it. Oi, and before we go, I just wanted to point this, like for the listeners out there and also the viewers, that book, that bodyboard that's behind your head, has that got signatures on it, man?
Oh, yeah.
Who is
that? Yeah. So, yeah, my mate's Adam Smith. He was a pro bodyboarder. He was a young kid, and that's actually his make of board. So he's a mate of mine. He lives in Cronulla, and he signed up for me. So
yeah, right.
Yeah. So
awesome. No, I was just intrigued, man, because I used to boot when I was youngster. So
So I'm more into me paddleboarding now. I strap me wheelchair to me paddleboard, and off I go.
And how's that go? Good.
Oh, yeah, it's good. Just the balance is sometimes a bit tricky, but you know. I want to ride a wave, you know, like that's what I want to do. I just, again, push the limits, see what happens, you know.
Mate, you took the words out of me now.
That's the goal, you know.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. It's all about pushing the limit. But thanks, brother.
Yeah, mate.
You get back on that board and start paddling,
mate,
and find those waves, man.
Thanks.
Over and out, brother.
All right, man. Take care, eh? We'll speak soon.
Speak soon, brother. You. Mr. Shannon Bates. He's doing solid work in the community, educating these youngsters on all things disability and the social barriers around that. Keep it up, brother. Doing solid work. Reach out to him. And if you like the podcast, hit that subscribe button. be much appreciated. And we've also got a Patreon page. So if you want to help further the channel, the podcast, hit the link within the description. Check it out. And if you contribute, that'd be awesome. Be great. And if you want to get in contact with me, you can get me via Instagram at StreetRollingCheetah or email, one word, StreetRollingCheetah@gmail.com. And we've also got a Facebook page, Keep Rolling with Jake Briggs, so check it out. And I want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here, and they've got great assistive tech also. So righto, we'll see you on the next one.